Blog Talk Radio.
This is Crown Talking Drum, and the views and opinions expressed on the Crown Talking Drum Radio Network are solely those of the hosts, guests, and callers. These views and opinions do not represent those of the Crown Talking Drum Radio Network, its management, hosts, or advertisers. Thank you for listening to Crown Talking Drum.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? Success leaves footprints, and what we do here is gently brush away the garbage that is laid on them that has kept them from being discovered. Because we often hear in our history that we must learn from history or else we will repeat it. We hear that over and over and over. The problem with that statement, it could be a true statement, except there are so many out of our history that what we are presented with is not our true history. What we do here on this program is we try to go back and look at those incidences that have taken place and look for the facts of those cases. We find that we are not revising history as much as we are presenting it in all its naked and ugly truth. It's not always ugly, not always naked, because in many cases, admirable things have been done, such as the main topic of our discussion today. Our main topic today, and we go through many topics on the show, Haben Girma. Probably never heard of that name. But this is a person that deserves to be honored and respected for what she has done, because she has done amazing accomplishments. And when you leave these out, you're left with the impressions that many of us have. I know that growing up, my feelings, thoughts, desires, or whatever about Africa were totally off base, completely off base. When I visited the country, I found how far off I was. And you want to talk about feeling uncomfortable, a most uncomfortable feeling. Because I didn't know. And I had talked to people from there. I know that they seemed as if they were educated. We were seeing some of the best from there. But they are not the only ones. When I was reading books on Africa, I didn't understand that this is a modern continent. Now, when we talk about Africa, we act as if it is one country, but it is made up of many countries, much like the United States is made up of different states. They are made up of different countries. And when I thought that most of these people were spending all of their day trying to avoid being eaten by tigers and lions, and that, you know, there were all sorts of poisonous snakes running all over the place. I didn't even know if they had modern restrooms, if they had indoor plumbing, although everything that I knew should have told me this. Now, when we look at our primary subject today, Haben Girma, her parents were from Ethiopia. Again, what kicks in when I think of African countries is I think of countries that are so backwards, they don't even deserve to be in the same context that we are. But when we look at Ethiopia, we look at the capital of Ethiopia in Addis Ababa. Now, when it comes to geography, we are horrible. Americans are horrible at geography. We barely know anything about Canada. We barely know anything about Mexico. And in many cases, we don't even know about our own country. Because I've had discoveries, and this is why I got into this. Because one day, while visiting Sutter's Mill in California, a place I never thought that I would ever go to, I didn't know that there were any black people in California. And I was visiting the Sutter's Museum, and I asked the curator, and this is a time when I love to go visiting museums. It's what I call the shoulder seasons. It's that season when the weather is still fantastic, but everybody has taken their kids back to school. And so I almost had him by myself. There were only a couple of other people milling around. And I don't know why, but I asked the question, were there any blacks who played a significant role? And I emphasize significant. And that's unusual for me because I usually am somewhat monotone. And I hope that you don't get bored during this discussion. But he told me about Nancy Monroe Gooch and her family owned hundreds of acres of land there. And they sold fruit wholesale in the state of California. I was also told that there were no descendants of that family, which seemed very strange to me. But I have made contact with several members of that family and have been tremendously impressed with the research that they are doing. And we'll be coming out with a story about them, I believe, in October. But let me go back to Ethiopia. Addis Ababa is a town of almost 3 million people. Did I ever think that there was anything like that in Africa? No. One of her parents was from Ethiopia. The other was from Eritrea. And we barely have ever heard the name Eritrea. But it is an adjoining country. It's like North Carolina and South Carolina. But they were fortunate. Her mother fled. Her father fled. They met and ultimately moved to California in the United States. And they were seeking better conditions for themselves and their family. And of this, they had at least two children. And one of them was Haben Girma. Haben, imagine this. We sometimes think that California is the land of milk and honey. There's no racism in California because we don't get that in the same picture that we do of the slaveholding South where people are beaten, where they're picking cotton, where all of these things are taking place. But California has so many restrictive codes, Jim Crow laws and whatever, because they had to write them not only against the black, but the Chinese, the Orientals, the Native Americans, and so many others. And so what we're doing is going around with a bunch of nonsense in our minds because we have never been taught. We've looked to our teachers for that, but I don't know that I can blame them because they weren't taught either. But what we're going to do today is we're going to go into that story. Now, I have a special guest on, and she is able to come in at any point that she wants to. And the reason that I have her here is because Haben is, which means that she cannot hear, and she is also blind. Now, imagine for a minute what it's like when you get up in the middle of the night and you can't see and you're stumbling around your house. This is not just a nighttime thing for her. It's an everyday thing. Now, if you were in such a condition where you could not see, somebody could yell at you and let you know that there is danger afoot. but she can't hear. Now, I do a weekly blog post on amazingblackhistory.com, and she is the subject of this week's discussion. And in that discussion, what it is, and she has done amazing things, because we would, many of us would just give up if we couldn't see, if we couldn't hear, let alone if we could not see or hear. Now, she was very astute in school. And one of the things that I want to point out to you is that we often pass on false judgments. Because my father had a class, taught a class in bricklaying at the South Carolina School for the Deaf and Blind at Cedar Springs. And I enjoyed accompanying him on as he went to those classes. He had one class. It met after regular school, and it was primarily with deaf students. I say primarily, because sometimes when we have blind people, they can see, but in a very limited way. Now, Harbin can see, but her vision is 1% of what a regular person would have. Most of us, if we have 50% of that, we are all a tither. But she can't. Now, on when I do the blogs, I also do videos, because the intent of what we're doing on this program and what we're doing on our blog post is to introduce you to history. And I do that by writing a summary, and I further enhance that with videos and books so that you can learn. You can't say that you don't know about these topics. There are over 250 posts on there. And I want to be diversified. Now, let me make one comment here. There is a phone number that went with the information that was out. You do not need to call that number. The only reason that you would call that number is if you have questions, comments, suggestions, disagree with me on a point. Right now, the microphones are closed to most people. I do have it open for a couple of very special people that are listening on the broadcast at this point. But if you do, later in the program, we will open the microphones where you can ask questions, make comments, suggestions, or what have you. This is not a program only to talk to you or talk at you. It is a program to get you involved in your history. There was a time when I worked in law enforcement. And during this time, I sometimes stopped people that did not have their seatbelts on. My little spiel, because I did very little in the way of writing tickets on that particular charge, was I should not be more concerned about your safety than you. And the same thing goes with your history. Somebody else should know more about your history than you do. I started looking at Black history, and I was afraid. I was afraid of what I was going to find out. I was afraid that basically I'd come out looking like a bumbling idiot, because our history basically says that we haven't done anything, never have done anything. We don't have the intelligence to do anything. Last week we talked about Bill Russell. Bill Russell was one of the greatest athletes of our time, and I'll tell you why. In 13 years of playing in the NBA, he was a champion 11 of those 13 times, much better than Tom Brady has done, and yet we acknowledge him to the highest. Bill Russell is often compared to Wilt Chamberlain. Wilt Chamberlain had scoring records. In fact, in one game, he scored 100 points. But the difference between Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain if Bill Russell was a team player. Wilt Chamberlain did what was best for Wilt Chamberlain. Is one of them wrong and the other one not? Not necessarily. But we have to arm ourselves with the facts so that we can determine what's going on. Now, again, I have had contact with blind people. But our other guest, which is, I believe, Helene Haywood, I've always called her Miss Haywood, is a school teacher in District 7 and works with blind students. Let me tell you a story that goes back to the time that I made my first friends at Cedar Springs. These were deaf kids. And one of the things that people used to call them were deaf and dumb. Dumb referring to the fact that they cannot speak. It's actually deaf mute. But it made me, it infuriated me because these people were not dumb. They were smart people. They had difficulty communicating. And we sometimes look at people for their disability as if they can't, as opposed to being adaptive and finding a way. I had a relative in Charlotte, North Carolina. I don't really know exactly. I think it was a cousin. I was very young when I met him. But he was a deaf mute. And when anybody would come to the house, they would hide him. I don't know whether they were ashamed of him or ashamed themselves for him. It didn't make any difference, but I don't think that it allowed the development to take place that we all can do. Now, as I talk about Haben Girma, I want to make a comment that goes back to a subject we've talked about for a long time. I believe our kids are underperforming in school, and I hope that the younger listeners are listening as well. Because Dick Gregory was a comedian, but he was also a philosopher. And I followed him through much of his career. He had daughters. His daughters were doing well in school. His son came to him one day and said, "Dad, I'm having trouble in school. In fact, I heard a teacher saying, are you sure they're brother and sister because they do so much better than I do in school?" And Dick, being a sage philosopher, said, "Do what your sister does. Do what your sister does." What his sister did was to do her work first. So if you don't remember anything else from the program, get in the habit of doing what you need to do before you do what you want to do. That is a secret of success. And we often come home from school, and I think one of the best things that we can do is to write a brief summary of what we've done in each class every day. And this is important because one of the success formulas found that separates successful people than those that aren't is that simple skill of writing down and of understanding what you're doing. Haben Girma finished high school, and upon finishing high school, she went to Portland State in Oregon. Portland State has a very good reputation, and she graduated magna cum laude with very high honors from Portland State, graduated college with very high honors, very high honors. And when she looked options, she was not encouraged to go, but she applied and was accepted at Harvard, the prestigious Harvard. And she went into their law school. Law. Many of us allow ourselves to be intimidated by law. And I say intimidated, and I say it purposefully. Because what we do is we see terms that are often in Latin, sometimes in Greek, but we see terms and we shut down. We say it's complicated. I don't understand it. But the same way that we develop our understanding of English, we can understand our understanding of law. To those people that are interested in law, and Lord knows we need more people interested in law, particularly now, is Black's Law Dictionary. Blacks, just like the color of people's skin, Blacks, apostrophe S, Law Dictionary. And when you hear terms, look them up. Now, you could do this online, and that is another thing. But we also allow ourselves to be intimidated medically, because many of those terms come from Latin. And when we talked about, a few weeks ago, James McCoon Smith, the first licensed doctor in America, the first licensed Black doctor in America, he was not accepted into any medical school in America, but was fortunate enough to be able to attend the University of Glasgow in Scotland, earned 3 degrees, top of his class in all three, did his residency in Paris. So we know that he has to be fluent in at least two languages. As we look at our history, it tells us that we don't have this intelligence. Let me go back to Bill Russell before I go off on this other offshoot. After Naismith invented the game of basketball, some of the most knowledgeable people in America said that Black people cannot play basketball. Why? Because they didn't have the intelligence, the mobility, the agility to dribble the ball down the court and make a play. Now, we've punctured a hole in that, and there are so many others that we can puncture. Now, when Mrs. Haywood comes on, I think that she will talk about that because she's worked with blind students and understands that they have a lot of capability. Sometimes we have to allow people to proceed and find out what works for them, what works for them. Sometimes we are too protective of our kids. And I know what it's like. I worked as a field training officer with the sheriff's department. And there we had to allow people to do, we talked about what they were going to do, about doing it. The only time that we would interrupt if they did something that was going to embarrass them or violate the law. And sometimes you're just cringing there. Sometimes when we send our kids to school, we feel that we've got to go up there and show out rather than partnering with the school, partnering with the teachers. This is what happens. And it happens to the best of us. Not that I'm one of the best, but I can remember in sixth grade, I came to a crossroad because I found that I could either do my math homework or take 5 licks in my hand. Hey, I could get them things out of the way in no time. And that worked until my teacher happened to bump into my father and tell him that I wasn't doing my homework. Whoa, that changed the whole world for me, folks. Sometimes we have to allow people to make mistakes. Now, when Harbin was at Portland State, she began to speak out for people with disabilities. Now, as you listen to the videos, you hear her speaking, but you'll notice that she speaks in a very high tone. And that is for a reason, because what limited hearing she has is in the upper registers. And so she has taught herself to speak that way. But there is not a single thing about her speech, about her intellectual level, about the flow of information that goes through her mind that is the least bit off were some of the most brilliant people that you've ever heard. And yet she is deaf, blind, black, female. People that often have difficulties navigating any kind of system that we come up with. And when she was at Portland State, she made mention to the cafeteria people because they had five lines. And she goes in and she has no way of knowing what is in either line. But under the Americans with Disability Act, they are supposed to provide her with a menu. And she did what she should do. She talked to the people in charge. Say, I need a menu. Well, we don't have time. We'll get around to it, whatever. But she persisted, and she got that on there. One of the reasons she did is she find out that she gets in a line, and that's not the line that may have her favorite dessert, chocolate cake. It doesn't make any difference what the reason is that we are now speaking out. What matters is that we do. Other people have benefited by what she has done. Now, I continue to look for those off-use case, and we will have in the future discussions from a great Michelle Howard. She is the first four-star admiral in the United States Navy. And when she talks about her story, she is much more than a stodgy old, what we think of as a sea captain. She's very personable, and she's relatable, and she enjoys people, and she spends time with her people. She encourages people to do things, and this is what I want to get out today. And I think that we will see some of that come out in the later parts of this episode, because when she was there, she began to advocate for people with disabilities. We don't understand what it's like to have a disability. I had a grandson that a few years back, in his first year in college, he suffered an accident where he fell about 40 feet and broke his back. Now, that didn't destroy his mind, but it did destroy his ability to walk. And I'm still holding out that one day he will be able to walk because his spine wasn't severed. But what we do is we often intercede so much that people don't have the ability to develop those skills and those things that they need to in order to succeed. He and his mother just got back from New York because he participates in the Challenge Athlete Foundation. These are adaptive sports. And he is on the rugby team. They were supposed to go to London last year. They had financial difficulties, weren't making, but I think he's on the team again this year, and we'll see what happens there. But he is a very capable individual. He has 2 degrees from Auburn University. He's working for PricewaterhouseCoopers. And all of these are because he has been allowed to progress and move at his own speed and do what he can do. Unlike my cousin Ben, who was basically shamed into the closet when people were there. So she went to Yale Law School. She is the first person of any race, any gender, who is both deaf and blind to graduate from Harvard Law School, prestigious school. It's not a cakewalk. We are capable of so much more than what we think about. I have seen what I consider to be amazing feats performed by people with disabilities. When I was at Cedar Springs, I would have lost every penny I had because I had a blind person tell me that he could thread a needle quicker than I could. Now I can see. I know what's going on. This guy cannot see. And yet he could thread a needle way faster than I could. he would put the needle with the eye and the thread in his mouth and pull it out almost that quickly. He developed this because he needed to sew something, and that was the only way that he could do it. I have seen another individual, and I've seen this come up later, that I'm sure was using echolocation, because you could have him in a room where we were doing masonry products, masonry projects. And what happened is he said that he could see, but he could not see. And I knew that he could not, because what would happen is we would flip the switch on the light so that he would think that it was on or off. And he would feel that. He was smart enough to know that. He felt that. And when he did, he would tell you that the lights were on or off. But he never stumbled into anything when the lights were off. And so I think that he had that capability of doing that. So what I want to do is let you know that people are capable well beyond what they are. I am going to ask Mrs. Haywood, if she's available and listening to us, if she would comment on the questions and comments and things that I've talked about. Is that you there?
Yes, sir, it's me.
Okay, go ahead. If you would. Now, did I mess up your first name?
It's Helene Nelson. You said it exactly correct.
Thank you. Would you tell me?
I was just going to say you provided some very, very good information and very detailed information about the young woman. But I think it's important to know, oftentimes when we see people who have either a visual impairment, hearing impairment, or the combination of the two, we see them at a stage where they become so adapted to their surroundings that it's often difficult for us to relate to the fact that they have such unique abilities. Haben has, she's expressed that, she's demonstrated that, because when you look at her, especially in the videos, I'll say, you just wouldn't see this this deaf-blind person, especially with her being able to have some vocal and being able to adapt her voice to where you can actually understand, you know, what she's speaking. And so it's important to know also that there are broad categories of deaf-blind people. There are about four of them, actually. There's people who were born deaf and blind before the age of 2 and 4, maybe. There are people who are born deaf but then lose their sight. There are people who are born blind and then you lose their hearing. And then there are people who've just lost both the vision and the hearing as they aged. And so there are different levels. And the thing about it is oftentimes these different levels are individualized or specified to the individual person. Haben, I believe I read that her loss was an unknown situation. It could have been Usher syndrome, which is a condition that oftentimes will take hearing loss and then vision. So it just depends, but it is an individualized case. But the main thing that is important is that they learn to adapt and that they do and have the ability to achieve and demonstrate their unique abilities as she has.
Okay. Now, you work with kids in, what, middle school and high school?
I can work with K through 12. My youngest happens to be about 4. My oldest happens to be about 16 at this time, the students I serve. And the students I serve are just visually impaired. I do have a student that does have a hearing and a visual impairment.
Okay. Tell us about those students. Are they adaptable? Do they have normal, quote, normal brain function and have a career path that they can succeed on?
Well, like I said, each child has their own unique abilities. I do have students who have a higher academia than others. I have students who are honor students. I have students who we just focus on making sure that they're able to independently achieve daily functions. So it ranges. But yes, we do have students who are able to lead just normal lives, and that is the goal they're setting for themselves and the educational track that they're on to achieve that status of an independent, functioning, everyday individual.
Now, one thing that I want to point out, Braille is a series of dots on paper, and Braille books have to be very thick because they can't be as flat as what we see in sighted people. But the discovery of the Braille system belongs to a French young person who was 16 years of age when they developed this. Is that right?
That is right. Louis Braille, yes. And you're right. Braille is a system, for example, one textbook for a student may be in as many as 20 to 25 volumes. So it's not as simple as going and pulling one book off the shelf. You have to achieve that certain volume of that portion of the book. And the Braille system is a unique system created of six dots. And of those six dots, you're able to create words, symbols, oftentimes whole sentences with just the six dots. So it just depends on what you're trying to achieve with the dots. But yes, it is their system of communication, and for most children who are depending on the vision loss they have, that is their primary medium of communication.
Now, in the videos, we saw Haben with a small instrument that basically displays in Braille. And because she does not hear, she has an assistant who types, which stimulates the machine that she has. Now, do you have that particular machine available to you?
Yes. I actually have students who that's what they utilize, a Braille reader. The Braille reader is magnificent. It can simply attach to a computer, a laptop, for example. And depending on what the student is trying to do, generally they have to use a screen reader that will relay the information to them to achieve the Braille on the Braille reader. Oftentimes this is quirky because, for instance, we haven't advanced ourselves enough to always consider this population of people, because websites are not often accessible for students or people using Braille readers. They're doing better. There are a lot of companies, such as Apple, for example, who keep that in mind, and they try to make things more accessible. But just day-to-day, that's not always the case. But, yes, I do have students who utilize Braille readers, and that's their primary use within the school system. That's what they primary and it keeps them from having to carry around the heavy Braille writer, which is something they'd have to do manually, which is what I generally use to adapt work sometimes.
Okay. Now, as I was doing this particular post, I thought about you because there are some things that can be done online to describe what is on the screen for people that have sight disabilities and what have you. And I believe the statistics say that 0.02% of the people in the world are affected with this particular condition, which is a very small number. And we sometimes overlook small numbers because as she has advocated for people with disabilities, she has done a tremendous job. Very complex world that she is living in. She's been given the Helen Keller Award, and Helen Keller, I believe, was in the 1920s. Am I right about that time frame?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And she was also deaf and blind. But she did right. some remarkable things. Now, one thing that I remarked about, I was absolutely amazed, was the ability of blind and deaf people to communicate with each other, because they're using completely different systems. The blind person could feel the hands of the deaf person. The deaf person could generally hear the blind or read the hand signals. And so people are very, very adaptive. And I bring this out because one of the things that I do is I have a show on Thursday at 7 p.m. You can use the same links to get to it. And it's called Faith and the Road to Success. And most of us are talked out of success because we are given so much garbage along the way that we can't do something. And I find it virtually impossible, because we can do whatever it is we want to do. Even people that have failed in school. I've got a post coming up on Joseph Jackson. And Joseph Jackson failed the 5th, 6th, and 7th grade multiple times. But he went to the military, got a GED, went to radio school, and we know him, and I've used his invention today because he invented the wireless TV remote. So you might go through a tough spell, but that doesn't mean that you can't. And we have to realize, because when we look at Louis Braille at 16, there is no lower limit and there is no upper limit on what we can do. The thing that prevents us from achieving our greatest is between our ears. And when we get words yeah. like can't, and it can't be done, I talk about Wendell Scott. Wendell Scott is the only black driver in the NASCAR Hall of Fame. He is from Danville, Virginia. His first race in NASCAR was at the Spartanburg County Fairgrounds. So how does a man of limited means compete against a high-dollar sport? He said, and his philosophy was, when those people spend all that money on equipment that they can't get to work, I'll make it work. And he is in the NASCAR Hall of Fame. To those of you old enough, there was a movie, Greased Lightning, I believe it is, starring Richard, which is about the life of Wendell Scott. And I'm in touch with his family members. But don't say, don't ever say that you can't do it. It might be tough right now. Now, how did you get involved in communicating with blind students?
My my initial involvement came many years ago when I was home from school. I attended Columbia College years ago. My mom taught deaf ed at the South Carolina School for the Deaf and Blind. And so the campus itself was really a second home for my brother and I. We were always there with my mom. It was just a thriving campus. And one summer when I was home from college, they needed someone to work in the blind school just for a camp. And so I did. And I happened to pick up the Braille. It was just the basic Braille. Just the uncontracted Braille, which is what we call it. And then I put it on a resume. As you know, you put everything on a resume that you think is going to make you shine, but never in a million years thought that they'd see that on the resume. And we just had a student in the district one year who happened to need some assistance. And from there, my career grew. It has become my passion. It was a kicking and screaming moment, but, you know, God often leads us down the road he wants us to get to, whether we want to or not. So it is my passion. It is what I do and what I love to do. So that's pretty much my journey, and that's growing because I'm looking for innovative ways to always assist in the area and in the community, the VI community.
Now, you mentioned something there that I want our viewing audience to hear. We sometimes don't polish up things on our resume. That is the time that we can and often should brag about accomplishments. I say this because I have done recruiting primarily for technical engineers and other technical positions. But I find that in many cases, a person has been in the military, for example, and they were able to command troops at a certain level. And they overlook this. And we often look at what we are doing now. A person may have been a master sergeant in the Army, and when they came out, the only job they could get is janitor, and then they see themselves as a janitor for the rest of their lives. There's nothing wrong, in my opinion, with any work that is honest, but I have dug ditches. I've dug everything else. Dirty jobs, I've done it. But I did it with a purpose. And when we go through life, we want to do so with a purpose. This leads us somewhere else. In your case, God led you to a gate. And when you got there, you may have been kicking and screaming, but you ultimately realized that, hey, ain't so bad over here after all. And you developed that passion.
Sir.
When you develop that passion, that is not like work. I know what work is. I know I've been on jobs where, you know, I'm looking at the clock every 2 or 3 minutes. How much longer do I have here? That's no way to live. It is not.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can work on a job and, oh, man, I got off an hour ago, that is a whole different world. So I'm very fortunate for that, that you were able to go down that particular path. And at this time, we do have the microphones open. Again, if you do have a question, you're not signed in, we appreciate the fact that you're listening by computer. But if you want to call in because you have a particular point, question, comment, suggestion, disagreement, that number is 646-668-8217. Again, 646-668-8217. Now keep that number handy, because on all of the Blog Talk Radio Crown Talking Drums, you will see the schedule. We have programs that come on throughout the week, and we are attempting to be responsive to the community. And the person that was initially was instrumental in getting this topic and this platform for us is on the air. And I hope that he's listening at this point, because he is. If you are, would you kindly tell us a little bit about the inception of this lineup that you have?
Well, good evening. And this was came to me many years ago when I was in Maryland. I was wanted a radio station, but I did not want one where we just talk at people. I wanted people to be able to interact and be able to ask questions. And so in 2016, in one of the ministries that I had, we had a meeting, and the webmaster found it, the technician found the platform. And that's whenever we secured it. But it took me 8 months before I did anything with it. And in August 2017 was when we first started. And my whole thing is that we need to be empowered. We need to be empowering the people that are listening to us. And we try to get topics that will bring knowledge and understanding to the events that's going on in the world today. And that's pretty much, oh, and in 1994, I left a large church. Oh, I'm a retired United Methodist pastor. I left a large church, and I was asking God, is it time for me to leave? And he told me, you can leave now. He said, you have been faithful with the few. Now I'm going to give you the many. He said that so long as you do the ministry according to the vision I give you, I will provide all, not some, all the necessary resources. So when we first started the radio, we had 21 bloggers as part of the radio. We were on from 6 in the afternoon on Monday through Friday. And then on Saturday morning, there was a program. Then we had Saturday afternoon program. We had a Sunday morning program and a midday program and an evening program. So like your guest, God has put me in a position where he showed me how you don't need all of that money. And it reminded me of his son who fed the multitude with the lad's lunch. And here we have listeners all across the earth. In Russia, well, I haven't seen it in China, and South America, Mexico, Great Britain, and Australia, India, Pakistan. But the thing is, we have listeners in Japan that's been listening ever since we started. So we're making a difference in somebody's life.
Yeah, we are. And if you have suggestions for a program, contact me or Bishop Armstrong, and we'll see what we can do to develop that idea. Because many of them come across just from that particular situation. Now, like I said, again, the program is intended to be directed at people. Understanding, when we look at our history, we are basically told that we haven't done anything. But I'm now looking at some of the civilizations in Africa and tremendously impressed. But what happens when we don't know our history is we fall prey. And for years, we've had ourselves portrayed on TV as shiftless, lazy, buffoons, what have you, to the point that many of us begin to believe that. And this is what we're trying to destroy. And when we talk about today, I want you to see the accomplishments that this lady has made. I want you to see the accomplishments that Ms. Haywood has been able to make in developing this world. And if you have questions, comments, or suggestions for any of us, please let us know. You can contact me at johncabercrombie@gmail.com, for example, and I can pass on information. Is there another way of leaving a message on here, Apostle?
No, but there is a, you can leave a message at, what is it, Talking Drums, the number 12, at gmail.com. Talking Drums, number 12, at gmail.com.
That's Drums, D-U-M-S, right?
Yes. Or the other thing, you can always call 980-636-4662. Now, I'm going to admit that if I don't recognize the number, I'm not going to answer, but leave a message and I will respond.
You're just like I am. I get so many calls that I have no interest in, leave a message. That's the adult thing to do nowadays because we get inundated with calls from everywhere. Now, I do see another caller from 919 area code. I don't know if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or whatever, but feel free. You are in family. And we learn more when we ask more, when we contribute. This is a family show. And so if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or disagreements, let us know.
May I make a couple more comments about the topic that you started out with about Africa?
Sure.
As a child in elementary school, I read this story about little black Sambo, and it was this little kid that this tiger ran him round and round the tree, and the tiger turned to butter. And it made me not have developed an interest in even a desire even to talk about it. And then they said it was the dark continent. Well, they told us, what did they say? The boogeyman lives in the dark. So there wasn't anything positive about the talk about Africa. And I've been twice. I've been to West Africa. And the thing is, when I was in Sierra Leone, the Queen Elizabeth ship was docked in the harbor. And I spoke at this college there to the young people, and I tried to explain to them that as opposed to them leaving their country, they should develop what they have. And I said, now, getting from one side of Freetown to another one takes hours almost. And all you have to do is get a water taxi. And they said, well, we don't have any money. My point to them, you got an idea. You got an idea. That's all you need. There's somebody out there that has money that will invest in your idea. So, and Freetown reminded me of New York until the rebels came in the war. Go ahead.
Yeah, I believe that next week we're going to talk about one of the most ingenious escapes from slavery, because we're going to talk about Henry Brown. And he is commonly called Box Brown, B-O-X Brown. And again, he used his ingenuity and escaped right under the noses of so many people. We see that our ingenuity is what fuels our inventions. We have been entrepreneurs since day one, and we don't see much of that. The reason that Tulsa was so prosperous is because that money circulated in that community. They don't tell you that people rented airplanes to drop gasoline on houses and left 10,000 people homeless, all because of an unverified claim that a white girl had screamed when a black guy got on an elevator with her. She didn't even press charges. And so we had hundreds that were killed. And when we look at our history, it is something to be absolutely proud of. When I look at Ray Montague, for example, Ray Montague grew up wanting to be an engineer. She had seen a German submarine that had been captured, and she looked down the reverse end, down the periscope, and said, what do I have to do that? And they say, be an engineer. Well, she excelled in school, but when she got ready to go to college, there was no college in Arkansas that would accept her. So she devised a way and became got a degree in business, and she looked for options. She went to work as a civilian for the Navy, and she had the Navy send her to computer classes. She didn't even have a driver's license. She bought a car. And in order to avoid detection, she went like 2 hours early and came home 2 hours late and had enough audacity to drive on the base without a license. Now, what did she do? At one time, it used to take 2.5 years to design a ship. 2.5 years for a team of white engineers to design a ship. And one of the presidents, I don't know whether it was Reagan or prior to, said that's taking too long. We need to cut it down to 2.5 months. Well, as things turned out, she learned computer programming. And when they put her on this project, she didn't have a team. It was her by herself. Now, understand, it was taking a team 2.5 years to do. So when she wrote the program, and from the time she pressed the button to the ship design came out, was 18 hours and 36 minutes. She is Navy's hidden figure. We have that in our DNA. And yet and still we go around acting like we're some of the dumbest people on the face of the earth. We don't know our history. We don't know what we are capable of. This is just like Katherine Johnson. We wouldn't be in space. John Glenn wouldn't have gone up because this was the early age of computers. And he said, I'm not going up until she confirms the numbers. You saw how she was treated in that movie. And we've run into the same thing every day. We have kids that go to school that are brilliant, that are beat upon. Well, not beat upon physically, but mentally. We have parents that come home and don't change that. And this is what we do when we understand our history, who we are, who we came from. Now, Ms. Haywood, you went to Columbia. Is that right? Is that where you got your degree?
It's not where I finished my degree. I did attend Columbia, but I finished my degree at Converse, an upstate university.
You know, I laid brick on Converse College.
Did you?
Yeah. I've
yes,
had many
sir.
Occupations. I laid brick on Spartanburg High School and the post office that's now on Church Street. In fact, I even worked on the one before that, which was on Magnolia. So we sometimes don't understand where we are going. Now, my father taught school in District 7 for 42 years. My mom taught for 10 years and opened a restaurant. And I had determined that I was not going to be a, because I didn't think that I could teach on my terms. I wanted to teach, but I wanted to teach in an unconventional manner and allow the students to develop an interest and pursue it. And in the segregated South, I did not think that would go. But I'm finding that I'm going back into an area of education because I can do it with the blog post. I can do it with the podcast that we're doing like now. So I'm trying to help people find those hidden treasures that they have and seek the ability to go out and do what they can do. That's why we're looking at some of these stories. Like I said, Joseph Jackson was almost 18 years old and in the seventh grade and basically thought that he should give up on education. But when he went into military, he was able to earn his GED. In fact, he became a doctor, and he has 6 patents that we talk about in the post on him, which is coming out soon. So never give up on yourself. Never. Never give up on our children, whether they are ours biologically or not. We have a tremendous force. We talked about Nichelle Nichols. Nichelle Nichols was Lieutenant Uhura on Star Trek. And it's interesting what Gene Roddenberry did. Remember that show took place in the 23rd century? Why? Because when he pitched it and pitched Uhura as being equal to these men on the bridge of the Enterprise, they fought back and said, that ain't happening now. And he said, when will it happen? They said, 300 years from now. So he said it in the 23rd century. But what a lot of us don't realize is that one of her great classmates, we probably know because she went with her as she was auditioning, and that was Marla Gibbs, which we know as Florence from the Jeffersons. They were high school classmates. There is something about getting together with people that have success on their minds, and that's what we do. This is our little cluster. This is our brain group. This is where we incubate our ideas. And this is why I'm so happy to have you on the program, because you can tell us that side of the story and how you were guided there and what is possible and what's capable in that particular world. Sometimes we don't see it coming. And sometimes it's like getting kicked upside the head with a horse. Sometimes that's what it takes to open our eyes. And I'm so fortunate that you were able to tell us about this, that you were able to add to the fact that you have seen the videos, you've seen the write-up, you know that what she did was not easy. But then nothing that we do that's worthwhile is necessarily easy. But we follow those passions, and you are able to transform lives every day in what you do. And people should know that and know that they are capable as well. So I want to extend my hearty thanks and congratulations for joining us. I hope that you will join us on other occasions.
Yes, sir. And I just want to encourage the – hello?
Yes.
Yes, sir. I just want to encourage the listeners to please read her book. It is so inspiring. And I think one of the things that struck me most in her book or the first initial time that I saw her determination within the book is when she wanted to travel to help others. And that foundation of wanting to help others, even though she couldn't see and even though her hearing is impaired, she still thought enough of someone else instead of just focusing on her. And I thought that was so impactful. So take the time to read her book. It is so inspiring. It is so inspiring.
And we do have, I believe, links to that book on the post. Those of you that shop Amazon, we appreciate it when you use those links to do any of your shopping on Amazon. It's not necessary to buy the product that's in the link, but that's how we fund our research that we do. It's a win-win situation for everybody because you don't pay it. Amazon, in this case, which is rich beyond compare, gives us a few pennies every time you do that, and we thank you for that. But I think that link is in one of the to the book is in there. Is that right?
Yes, sir, I believe so. I do believe I saw it there.
Okay. Yeah, very inspiring. So unless we have any other questions, comments, or whatever, I don't want to just talk because I've got time to do so, but I don't want to leave anybody out that may have comments, questions, or concerns. Let's hear from you. This is a big family. And when you ask questions, I used to sit in the class And I'd have questions. I'd say, well, I'm not going to ask this because they might know that I'm dumb. But why in the heck are you in a class if you're not there to learn? Don't be afraid to learn, because once you've learned it, nobody can take it away from you. Nobody. It's yours, free. It's like a gift. And so that's what we intend to do with the program. The program you're listening to is Did You Know? And Success Leaves Footprints. We go back through history, and we find some of the most amazing stories you could ever imagine. And we dust them off. We leave the facts intact and allow those facts to speak for themselves. But we give voice to them, because I have learned so much after finding out about Nancy Gooch. In fact, let me give you this one right quick. John Brown's raid on Harper's Ferry, I had no idea what that was about. I heard it in class. But John Brown wanted to raid the U.S. Armory and get all of the weapons and give to the slaves. John Brown was a white man, so that they could free themselves. The funding of John Brown, which would be about $1 million today, came from a black lady by the name of Mary Ellen, living in San Francisco, California, in those days. I found out about her in the research and in the discussion with family members of Nancy Gooch. She financed. Now, she had no education, but she was smart. I want to make sure that people understand that there is a difference between being intelligent and being academically acclaimed. She worked as a waitress, but it was a high-end club, and she heard people talking about investing of money, and she did it. She didn't know how to read and write. There's a park in San Francisco right now with her name on it. The Mary Ellen Pleasant Park happens to be the smallest one in San Francisco, but it is there, and it's significant to me because I know who she was and what she did and what she was able to accomplish. Ever write yourself off. Don't write anybody else off. And as we continue to provide you with these stories, we hope that you'll tune in. We hope that you'll share the link with other people, not only for my program on Thursday and this one on Sunday, but others on the network as well. So if we don't have any other questions, comments, I do encourage you to join us again next week. I want to give special thanks to Mrs. Haywood for her remarkable contributions to the program, Bishop Armstrong for putting it together and allowing the program to function. And other than that, my friends, join us again next Sunday when we will talk about Henry Box Brown. He got this name because he had himself nailed into a box and shipped to freedom. Ever heard of it? You will on these programs, because we leave no stone unturned in educating. This is where we learn, but we learn from the facts, not a distorted picture that's often put out there. Thank you. Be blessed, and join us again next week. Be blessed, my friends. Be blessed.
Shalom.